one of those black swan events, if you will, that not many people have on their radars.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. So I like to think about the future of sexy new technologies, sure, but frankly, sometimes we need to think about things that aren't all that sexy, you know, like metal packaging. Virtually all of us need metal packaging to get by. It's kind of the backbone of our society in many ways. That's why I wanted to feature the story of Trivium Packaging. They're one of the biggest companies you've never heard of, probably, even though they're $2.7 billion in size. And they deliver innovative and sustainable metal packaging that helps some of the leading brands on the market, like Conagra, Anheuser-Busch, Nabisco, and many more, protect their products and stand out on store shelves. So Trivium was considered an essential business during the whole COVID shutdown, so they kept their factories open to continue production and keep up with demand. And due to swift and early action taken by Trivium CEO Michael Mapes earlier this year, with the health and safety of his 8,000-plus employees the number one concern, supply chains were kept intact without any major disruptions. So I'm really delighted we were able to get some time on Michael's calendar to discuss black swan events, how a company like Trivium prepares for risks and pre-plans to avoid shocks to their supply chain, how COVID might very well speed up automation, and how to be a better futurist on an ongoing basis. So let's jump right in. So, Michael, welcome to Future Proof.
Great to be here, Jeremy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the first thing I really like to ask everybody is, you know, who are you in your own words and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So first and foremost, I'm a husband and father of five. So I really define myself first and foremost as a family man. But professionally, I'm the CEO of Trivium Packaging, which is a global leader in metal packaging. And on a day-to-day basis, I really spend my time with customers, with employees, you know, visiting our factories, also engaging with different stakeholders like our board of directors, government, you know, different trade associations, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously a huge plate, even during normal times, you know, forget about pandemics. So how do you describe Trivium and its mission in your own words? Because I think that, you know, some companies, it's always interesting to me, there are some companies that operate in the background of our society and our economy, and people don't necessarily think about what they're doing, but they're doing something major and providing, you know, major economic value. So how do you think about Trivium? How do you explain in terms of what your mission is?
Well, first and foremost, let me just give a little bit of background on Trivium Packaging. So Trivium Packaging was formed last year in October as a combination between Exol and Arda's legacy food and specialty business. And what we did is we combined these companies to create a global leader in metal packaging. We're about $2.6 billion in revenue with 60 locations around the world. We have about 8,000 employees. But when we formed Trivium Packaging, we did this at an important time. We did this to purely focus on metal packaging. Metal packaging, as you may know, is 100% recyclable, and it's actually infinitely recyclable. It recycles forever. It's the most sustainable packaging in the world. And we did this at a time when governments, brand owners, and ultimately consumers are really tired of the harmful impact of plastic packaging on the environment. And also, you know, obviously getting into our food sources. But to that end, our mission is really something that's important to all of our employees at Trivium Packaging. It really gives us the strength on a daily basis to provide our unique promise to our customers. But simply put, you know, our mission is we are here to produce packaging that positively impacts the lives of consumers and leaves the world in a better place.
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting, obviously, is, you know, people might not have been thinking as much about packaging until all of a sudden physical substances and products, we started feeling they might, you know, make us unsafe or unwell. And I think that that's obviously a big shift for a lot of consumers. But I think from what I've heard, you know, you guys were probably a little bit better prepared than some to combat and to, you know, be on top of the pandemic of 2020. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, how ready would you say that you all are, that you were ready, you know, for the challenge or any challenge, you know, on a COVID-19 like level? How ready would you say you guys were?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, yeah, as I mentioned, we operate 60 locations around the world. So as you can imagine, some of our locations are in areas that may be more sensitive to economic shocks, political risk, maybe, you know, some areas that might be more prone to weather-related risks. So there's always lots of risks that we're planning for. But I have to tell you, I don't think too many executives out there were planning for, you know, the world to shut down as a result of a global pandemic like coronavirus. But that being said, because we had been proactive in putting together business continuity plans, and the fact that we have a really global footprint with 60 locations, as I mentioned before, we were quite ready to respond. And you also have to remember that our products, I should have said up front, you know, that our products at Trivium Packaging are products that are vital to the world. I mean, we make food cans. About 75% of our business is focused on food cans. So food, seafood, infant nutrition, infant formula type products. But also, you know, we make products for disinfectants and other sprays that are important part of COVID. So, you know, we had to work quite quickly to make sure that we're in a position to be able to ultimately stay up and running so that we could be able to supply the world in a time of need.
I mean, yeah, I think regardless of how ready you were for a COVID-like challenge, how much did you anticipate this type of event in your disaster planning? I mean, is this something that, you know, if you take an honest assessment, was this something that, you know, you guys said, well, listen, there could be a pandemic that impacts our supply chain? Because I certainly can't, I'm humble enough to say that I would not have thought of it, but I know it's your job to think about things like that.
Yeah, you know, obviously we didn't think about a pandemic per se happening, for sure. I mean, that was not on our radar screen. It's one of those black swan events, if you will, that not many people have on the radars. That being said, again, you know, it's our job, it's my job specifically to make sure that the company is prepared regardless of what may happen to potentially interrupt our operations. So, you know, again, having business continuity and plans in place for each of our facilities, you know, identifying some of the key risks in our supply chain, identifying, you know, the art of possible of what potentially could happen. But, you know, quite frankly, as COVID hit, it required us to really adapt on the go and make sure that we were prepared as a business to be able to continue to keep our employees safe and continue to supply high quality products to our customers.
Yeah, and I know I definitely want to ask you a little bit about how you kept people safe. So let's definitely come back to that. I think one thing that's interesting to me, you mentioned black swan events. And I think a lot of people are very interested in, if you're a leader, you know, of your stature, what other types of disasters and unexpected black swan events does Trivium usually, you know, plan for, you know, and do you have any examples? Like when you're in the room thinking, what could go wrong, and doing almost a pre-mortem, are there any other things that, you know, that keep you up at night?
Yes. Well, the first thing we do is we take a look at, you know, where our facilities are located and what sort of risks could be, you know, more of the higher risk scenarios in a particular location. You know, if it's located by the sea, maybe a tsunami or a hurricane or some sort of natural disaster, fires, of course, and, you know, other natural events. You know, there's always could be a risk of supply chain interruptions and other normal, you know, competitive and business related threats. But, you know, clearly something like a global pandemic or a war, you know, a big trade war, it could be a physical war or a trade war. These are things that, you know, that we always have to be mindful of the risk of happening and just make sure that we're prepared and ready to respond accordingly.
So how did Trivium keep its supply chain intact without any major disruptions through the pandemic, from what I've read, at least? You know, that seems pretty difficult to do, no?
Yeah, it is incredibly difficult, but, you know, it comes to planning in advance. And fortunately, Trivium had done a lot of pre-planning to be prepared for a potential shock to its supply chain. You know, we have diversity of our supplier base, so that we're able to shift product around from one supplier to the other to ensure business continuity. At the same time, we were able to look at facilities within our own network to make sure that if, you know, one plant was particularly more impacted than another, we could shift products to another location and continue to service our customers. So, you know, quite frankly, we didn't miss a beat. We didn't miss any customer orders. We, you know, continued to deliver high quality products to our customers. And, You know, as a result, you know, our customers are, we serve some of the biggest brands in the world, and they count on Trivium because of our ability to do that.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, you touched upon some of those potential, you know, the fires metaphorical or not, and the, you know, the wars metaphorical or not, that could be major challenges to you. But I mean, for those people out there who are not supply chain and logistics experts, you know, what are some other supply chain management issues that worry you in the long term that you have to mitigate against? Because all these pieces are so interconnected, I imagine if one part of the chain breaks or stumbles, then it impacts all of it.
Yeah, and it's a great question. I think, you know, I'll answer it more generally as well. I mean, the big picture is, you know, in any business, it's important to make sure that you have a backup supply option for your suppliers and your different input costs. It could be, you know, if you're producing products, it could be, you know, not only raw materials, but it could actually be related to your equipment. If you don't have the right spare parts to be able to produce products, if your equipment goes down, or, you know, being able to get logistics, you know, if the border shuts down and you can't move freight from, you know, from your country to the next, obviously that's a challenge. So what we have done, again, is just make sure that we have business continuity plans in place to ensure that we're well positioned. And as a result, we have done that, and we'll continue to do that. I don't see any major issues at all in the future that we can't overcome, because we've built that into our supply chain already.
Yeah, I think that another thing that I was really curious about is response time, you know, in order to be able to recover well from a crisis, right? I mean, it seems that if you have the ability to, if you have anything that particularly impacts your supply chain or any other part of your business, it's impossible to anticipate all of these things, but at least you can say, well, you know, if you're going to respond faster and pivot faster than other people within your industry, at least you've got a better, you know, fighting chance at staying ahead of the curve, no?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, response time is absolutely critical when there's a shock to the system. And, you know, that first and foremost is identifying the issue and understanding quickly what areas of the business that's going to impact. And then making sure that you have proper communication flow to the different leaders within the business, but the different stakeholders, quite frankly, that could be impacted, whether it be customers, whether it be suppliers. And, you know, fortunately, when COVID hit, we were able to respond quite quickly to identify where some of the key risks would be and what we needed to do to put in place to respond to that, make sure that we, you know, A, were able to, you know, keep the business running, keep employees safe, keep the customers satisfied, but ultimately be able to just communicate to each of the parties to make sure that we're all on the same page.
I know that it certainly sounds like, from everything that I've read, that you guys were ahead of the curve and were able to do a lot of things, you know, as well as possible in a very difficult situation. But I also think, you know, the hallmark of really good leaders and, you know, people who are futurists is they're able to learn from their mistakes and then adjust their, you know, beliefs accordingly. So is there anything that you learned throughout the whole process where you said, well, this is a thing that, God forbid, if we have to go through this again, but we learned a lesson and we'll do something differently next time?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, you know, I should just give a little context. One of the things that we did right up front, which proved to be extremely beneficial, is we created a central control tower, central control team. And I had a person that was in my executive team reporting directly to me that we put on this full time to be able to, you know, to manage this crisis, if you will, throughout all of Trivium Packaging. And that proved to be extremely, extremely effective, both managing internal communication as well as, you know, with customers, et cetera. So one of the lessons that we learned was how important that was. You know, another piece that we need to do in the future that we weren't quite prepared for was, you know, because this pandemic hit so quickly, we didn't actually have face masks in all of our facilities around the world. We weren't ready to respond to that. We had certainly hand soaps and hand sanitation within our facilities, but that quickly, you know, became pressured in terms of running out. So in the future, one of the areas that we're looking at is how do we make sure that we have the right stockpile in place to be able to respond, to keep our employees safe and make sure that we can keep our operations continuing to produce. Fortunately, we moved so quickly that we were able to secure these much needed materials. We were able to actually get 200,000 masks out to all of our employees around the world. And that proved to be not only quite effective in terms of limiting the COVID impact within our operations, but it also, and I should say of our 8,000 employees, only 13 to date have been confirmed to have COVID. But, you know, if we take a look at the protective equipment, you know, we're making sure in the future that we do have the right masks and hand sanitization going forward.
And I think obviously just from a metric standpoint, considering how physically non-distant, you know, your work has to be, in a lot of cases, those numbers are, you know, very impressive. I think, you know, even if you don't have all the answers in a crisis, you know, I've always felt that communication is incredibly valuable in that time. And that's when people appreciate it. And likewise, they can kind of revolt when they don't get that type of, you know, communication from management. So how did you take that lesson to heart at Trivium when, you know, things were getting a little bit crazy and every single day, you know, I felt that the messaging out there was a little confusing and you didn't know exactly what to expect as a human living in society from a day to day. So how did you manage that from a communication standpoint?
Yeah, so communications are critically important, especially when you're managing, you know, a workforce across so many different countries and so many different locations. But communication and transparency is critical. We, again, moved quite quickly to establish that central control team, the control tower. And we had regular communications in all different formats to our employees, to our customers, and to various stakeholders. But just to give you an example, internally within our employee base, we had not only written communications that we got out to the team, but we held a number of town halls with the employees, both globally, but locally as well within the different businesses. And then, you know, I personally also had them with our plant managers, which, as you can imagine, in a manufacturing setting with the majority of our workforce actually in the manufacturing operations, it was super important for all of our plant managers to be completely aligned with what we were doing as a company.
Did the shutdown make you think at all about, you know, your company's long-term work from home policies? Because I imagine, obviously, not everybody, of course, in your company, I would imagine that most people can't work from home. And I could be wrong about that, but, you know, you'll let me know. But I'm just wondering if that made you just even think about those policies in general for those who might be able to.
Yeah, so we have a mix. I mean, obviously, we're a manufacturing company where the majority of the workforce is in the factories. So what we did early on was make sure that we protected those manufacturing workers and limited the amount of non-essential manufacturing personnel in the factory. So we immediately moved to social distancing measures within our facilities, but also for those that could work at home, we had them work at home. And that has actually proven to be quite effective for us. And as a result, we're certainly going to look at, you know, continuing this where it makes sense going forward. It's a benefit to the company, not only from a health and safety standpoint, but quite frankly, from a, you know, productivity and quality of life for certain employees, that makes a lot more sense. So we're going to look at being a bit more flexible in the future on the work from home.
Well, I don't know how old your kids are, but my kids are of the age where working from home definitely does not help me, I got to tell you. So for some people, it's great. And yeah, for some people, it's like, get me out of the house as soon as possible.
Yeah, no, that's what we're seeing as well through this. So again, everyone's personal situation is a bit different. But I think the key in all of it is just being able to have some flexibility. If an employee needs to work from home or maybe work some non-traditional hours, I think this has proven, COVID has certainly proven that around the world, people can still be effective working from home in a lot of different instances. So again, just having that open mindset is going to be important in the future.
Yeah. So we were talking about employee safety before, and you know, I think, you know, health and safety are incredibly important. How could they not be? But at the same time, if you're not protecting anybody's jobs because you drive revenue to zero, you know, nobody's going to be happy with you also, you know, in that circumstance. So how do you balance, you know, that whole entire employee safety factor in the on-the-fly decisions you had to make during the early days of the COVID crisis? Is there some type of calculus? You know, I don't know what algorithm, you know, you plug in to figure out, you know, the value of, you know, somebody's health while you're trying to actually ship product. But it seems like that's a very difficult calculus to make.
Yeah. So if you look at Trivium, our first priority period is employee safety. We don't have anything if we don't have the safety of our employees. And that is widespread throughout Trivium. Every employee knows that. So, you know, as we looked here for COVID and the impact on the business, the first thing that we looked at is how do we make sure that our employees can be as protected as possible, making sure that they're staying safe day in and day out. We moved to get protective equipment in place, whether it be face masks, increased sanitation. We also, not just hand sanitation, but quite frankly, sanitizing in between shifts in our production, our operations. We also, like I've mentioned before, we moved quickly to limit the amount of personnel that were in our factories. But we did all of this with the notion that we knew that our products were essential to the lives of consumers out there. You know, we're making food cans that clearly, as you could see as the pandemic hit, if you went into the grocery stores, the products that were immediately off the shelves were all the food cans. So we knew that we needed to continue to produce and get that food out to consumers. But again, making sure that first and foremost, we knew that we were able to keep our employees safe through this. And, you know, that was the first order of business. You know, in areas, I should say, that were highly impacted. For example, we had eight factories. We have eight factories in Italy. And when the pandemic hit early on, a couple of our facilities were right in the center of the bullseye, if you will. So, you know, of course, we had to take a really stringent approach there to make sure employee safety was front and center so that we could make sure that, you know, that was taken care of before we could get products out.
So obviously, there's a rightful place, you know, for automation in every organization that's trying to make a profit and stay ahead of the competition. How might the COVID shutdown make some companies rethink their reliance on these fallible human machines, you know, because we're kind of fallible and we're prone to viruses. Obviously, machines are in a very different way, but, you know, machines can't get biological viruses. So I'm kind of thinking that this might speed that up. But, you know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly it may well be that the coronavirus outbreak is going to speed up the process of robots and in some instances replacing humans. I mean, if you look at Walmart, for example, which is our biggest retailer, where robots are used to scrub the floors, or, you know, for example, in South Korea, you may have seen in the news about robots being engaged to measure people's temperature and handing out hand sanitizer, for example. You know, there's no doubt that there's going to continue to be automation. It's going to continue to, you know, impact certain types of jobs. But quite frankly, I think it'll also lead to the creation of new jobs that don't even exist today. So, you know, I think it's all about innovation, driving change, and making sure that employees in the workforce and those that are coming into the workforce can be agile and make sure that we're learning new skills and giving employees new skills to be successful in the future.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be really helpful to everybody listening. So I got to thank you for it. And before I let you go, I have one question I'm really curious about is how do you challenge yourself to be a better futurist on an ongoing basis, right? Because your job is to look out for this major organization and try to anticipate the challenges of tomorrow so that they don't become, you know, major challenges and roadblocks when you actually run into them. Like instead, try to anticipate them and get around them as best as possible. So what are some things that you try to do that you'd recommend that others do just to try to be a little bit of a better futurist on, you know, day three versus day two versus day one?
For me, it's important to read a lot, learn a lot, constantly surround myself with people that have a different way of thinking than I do, to also, you know, tap into not only expertise internally, but also reach out to, you know, people across different industries, different geographies, and, you know, places like higher education institutions, for example. So for me, I have to know that I don't know what I don't know. And the best that I can do is make sure that, you know, I'm an agile learner and continuing to make sure that my team and my organization is also open to all the different ideas out there to make sure that we can see as far out as possible.
Well said. I like that. And I think, you know, people are going to get a lot out of this conversation. So, Michael, thanks again for making the time.
Great, Jeremy. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Michael Mapes for making the time. And I got a lot out of this because, like I said, I think that we can definitely learn a lot from the unexpected sources. And I think people don't think about things like metal packaging until you realize how incredibly how important it is to our society functioning well. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Futureproof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Futureproof.